Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, January 6th, 2024. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Midland led Texas in employment growth in November. The Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area led the state in employment growth during the month of November, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported Thursday. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported a 4.7% gain in employment during November, which is the sixth largest in the nation and leads the state of Texas. In West Texas, the next largest reported gain was 2.9% employment growth in Lubbock. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the number of employees in the Midland Metropolitan Statistical District increased from 117,400 in November 2022 to 122,400 in November of 2023. The number of employees was 121,400 in October, according to the BLS. Midland also had the lowest unemployment rate in the state in November at 2.2% unemployment. The Texas state average was 3.5%. Percentage of employment growth in November in West Texas, according to BLS. Midland, 4.7%. Lubbock, 2.9%. Lubbock, 2.3%. Abilene, 1.4%. San Angelo, 1.3%. Amarillo, 0.7%. Biz Buzz. Local businesses to help Midlanders achieve their New Year's goals. With the arrival of 2024 just a few days ago, many Midlanders are looking to sort out and fulfill their New Year's resolutions. Statista, a consumer trends website, recently compiled and published a poll where respondents shared their most common resolutions heading into 2024. These are the top three in order of popularity: save more money, exercise more, improve diet. Below is a list of local businesses that the Reporter Telegram has profiled in its Biz Buzz and Small Bites collection in 2023 and the beginning of 2024 that can assist you or your loved ones in sticking to your resolutions in the new year. Exercise more. Renewed Strength CrossFit. In July, we talked to personnel from Renewed Strength CrossFit, a CrossFit gym in North Midland. Owned by Levi and Rebecca Kirk, Renewed Strength is dedicated to improving lives through physical fitness, grow a community, and make friends. Lisa Hoag, a CrossFitter and Renewed Strength social media manager, said it can be intimidating to step into a CrossFit gym for the first time, but the community and physical benefits are well worth it. Quote, there are many characteristics of functional movements that CrossFit athletes and trainers can use to discern functional from non-functional movements. For example, we say functional movements are natural, meaning they are not movement patterns used only at the gym. Rather, these movements are found everywhere in human behavior and arise spontaneously as a response to life. For example, getting up out of a chair requires an air squat, picking up groceries from the floor, a deadlift, getting a 5-gallon water jug onto a table, a clean, placing items on a high shelf, a shoulder press. End quote. CrossFit's website defines CrossFit. Midland BJJ and MMA. Midland BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and MMA, Mixed Martial Arts, owned by Brad Barnes, is a Jiu-Jitsu and Martial Arts Academy at 4612 Billingsley Boulevard that offers a wide variety of programs including Jiu-Jitsu, Mixed Martial Arts, Muay Thai, and law enforcement training. Quote, it's a Jiu-Jitsu Academy, but I feel like Jiu-Jitsu Academies all have their own vibe. So our vibe aligns more with people who are doing this for self-defense, community, and mental health, end quote. Midland BJJ owner and head instructor Brad Barnes said during the Reporter Telegram's visit in the fall. Barnes described the positive environment and community that Midland BJJ fosters. Quote, this is kind of a no one's coming to save you kind of environment, so you have to learn how to do it on our own, but because it's something for some people that's triggering or serious, We want to be sure we're having a good time, so there's always music playing. There's always good people here. We've always got upper belts. More experienced guys really like adopting new students, helping them out, helping them grow, end quote, Barnes said. Midland BJJ class schedule. Schedule, Midland BJJ. F-45 training. Another gym the Reporter-Telegram profiled was F-45 training, a gym at 4425 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 110, that specializes in 45-minute group training classes in resistance, cardio, or a hybrid of both, led by two personal trainers per class. Manager Katie McDonald said F-45 offers classes throughout the day, with their first class starting at 4:45 a.m. and their last class starting at 6:20 p.m. McDonald said F-45 clientele love the coaches, atmosphere, and the ability to make new friends while improving fitness levels. Save more money. Below is a list of local businesses the Reporter-Telegram has profiled that offer affordable products from Midlanders and Odessans. Kirby's Closet. Kirby's Closet at 3516 East University Avenue in Odessa is a women's boutique that sells fashionable clothing, shoes, accessories, gift items, and much more. Owner Kirby Scott discussed their emphasis on providing affordable clothes for West Texans. Quote, that's our biggest thing, end quote, Scott said. Quote, we rarely have anything that's retailed over $100. We have a few, but like $120 is our max, end quote. Midland Thrift Company. In August, we met Isaiah Reyes, the owner of Midland Thrift Company, the vintage streetwear shop at 619 West Texas Avenue, offers a wide variety of items, including all kinds of clothing from t-shirts to hats, pants, vests, and more at a wide range of prices. Reyes is a lifelong Midlander who began selling clothes and sneakers to shops, much like the one he owns now. After a while, Reyes decided to start selling clothes and sneakers on his own social media accounts. As his social media sales continued to grow, Reyes started to pool his clothes and sell them at local pop-up markets. In June 2023, Reyes was skateboarding around downtown Midland and rolled past an open office building in downtown where he could set up a brick-and-mortar location. Vintage Deluxe. Vintage Deluxe is a vendor mall the Reporter-Telegram profiled in October. Located at 2117 East 42nd Street in Odessa, Vintage Deluxe carries clothes, home decor items, games, furniture, toys, and much more. Vintage Deluxe vendors bring items priced from an affordable $1.25 piece to $600 collector items, manager April Shelton said. Vintage Deluxe is a vendor mall that allows West Texans to sell products from the storefront where vendors make a profit. Shelton shared that one vendor takes all the sales she makes from Vintage Deluxe and puts it towards her daughter's medical school fund. Improved diet. Anna James Brewing. Entertainment reporter Morgan Taylor Thomas's recent feature on Anna James Brewing tells the story of a local kombucha brewery that uses fresh fruits and juices to create a healthier product. Quote, often a probiotic, the kombucha produced at Anna James Brewing also contains less sugar and toxic preservatives compared to those found in stores, making them one of a kind, end quote, Thomas reported. Anna James Brewing also serves pickles, jams, nuts, and over 60 items for guests to choose from. Small Bites, a love story brewed in kombucha. When Anna Bess brought some of her homemade kombucha to her first date with now-husband James, the drink didn't capture his heart the same way she did. In fact, he didn't really want to ever drink the fermented sip again. The flavors tasted too strong, and that typical kombucha smell did not help. Yet, as they spent more time together, James became hands-on with creating different flavors. Now, 4 years later, that same kombucha drives the couple's homegrown business, Anna James Brewing. A product of trial and error, as well as dedication to their craft, Anna James Brewing stands as the Bess's reminder for how far they've come. As a Mennonite group of Anabaptist Christians, Anna grew up making healthier and handmade alternatives for different foods and drinks, according to James. Together, the duo learned how to perfect that craft and share it with the Midland Odessa community. Quote, our process takes 7 days for the tea to turn into kombucha. We flavor it on the seventh day, and then it usually takes about 3 days for it to self-carbonate, end quote. James explained. Quote, some people that have a stigma around store-bought, not liking it or whatever, it's because it's carbonated. So we have some customers that buy it non-carbonated, end quote. Although they don't claim to be organic, Anna and James use fresh fruits, juices, and flavoring powders in all of their kombucha flavors. Often a probiotic, the kombucha produced at Anna James Brewing also contains less sugar and toxic preservatives compared to those found in stores, making them one of a kind. However, the Besses don't stop at kombucha. Quote, we were doing Park's Legato, and it was good, but we needed more stuff to offset because the farmer's market in Midland wouldn't allow us to bring our kombucha due to certain permits, end quote, James stated. Along came pickles, jams, breads, salsas, relishes, candies, and nuts. In total, their website, www.annajamesbrewingcompany.com, offers over 60 items for guests to choose from. Beyond the kombucha, bread clocks in as the next bestseller. Another lifelong recipe from Anna. Each sourdough is made from scratch with Anna's family starter and baked with delectable flavors such as cinnamon and sugar or garlic and herbs. Anna James Brewing also offers sourdough pita chips. Owning Anna James Brewing is more than a means to an end for the Best family. Passion and a community-oriented mindset back the business's model, and without people like Anna and James in our Permian Basin community, we would lack the diverse and unique perspectives driving Midland, Odessa to become a better place. Quote, I come from a family of cookers. That's my passion. I could cook all day long and not really be tired. My wife comes from a big family too, and they feast every single meal. So to be able to cook and serve other people is just a joy for both of us, end quote, James admitted. Oil prices rise along with tensions in Middle East. Rising concerns that tensions sparked by the Israel-Hamas conflict could spread wider in the Middle East sent crude prices higher in the first week of trading in the new year. West Texas Intermediate rose 2 of 4 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange. WTI opened a holiday-shortened week by falling $1.27 Tuesday. But that loss was quickly overcome by a $2.32 surge Wednesday. Prices ended the week by rising another $1.62, or 2.24%, to close at $73.81, up from $71.65 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $70.29, according to Plains All American. Cold temperatures, including a potent winter storm system taking aim at the northeast, heated up natural gas prices on the NYMEX. Natural gas futures rose all 4 trading days, including a 10-cent jump Wednesday and a 15-cent surge Thursday, that sent prices close to $3 per MCF. Prices added another 7 cents Friday to close the week at $2.893 per MCF, up from $2.514 at last Friday's close. Bob Dimmitt, president of Eris Energy LTD, which is preparing to drill the first 2 of what he said is a 4-to-5 well drilling program in Ector County, said he would prefer crude prices to be a little higher. Quote, but they're in a good range that allows us to move forward with our drilling program, end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram by telephone. Prices are also in a range that lets the company drill on cash flow, he added. While he said the drilling program is the 4-to-5 wells, for now he said stronger prices could see Eris drilling additional wells. Quote, our wells are deep and expensive, and we are in tune with increased cost for supplies and services, end quote, he explained. Quote, we have over 17,000 acres to develop, end quote, he said. The wells he is permitting are horizontal Mississippian wells, and Dimmitt said he believes the Mississippian is the next big play. Natural gas consumers got a price break in 2023, according to the Energy Information Administration. The EIA, citing data from Refinitiv Icon, said the benchmark Henry Hub natural gas price averaged $2.57 per million British thermal units in 2023, down about 62% from the 2022 average annual price. The monthly average Henry Hub price was below $3 per MMBTU every month but January, and the lowest monthly average was $2.19 in May. The EIA credits record high natural gas production, led by the Permian, as well as Haynesville and Appalachia, and flat consumption, along with rising natural gas inventories for the lower prices in 2023. OPD, police vehicle hit during major crash. The Odessa Police and the Odessa Fire Rescue responded to a major crash on January 3rd involving three vehicles. The crash was along Highway 80 and Vaudrey Road. According to police reports, the investigation into the crash revealed that a Buick Enclave operated by 23-year-old Caleb Kirby was traveling west on Highway 80. A Chevrolet Equinox operated by 55-year-old Carmen Ray was stopped facing south of Vaudrey while waiting to turn east onto Highway 80. A Honda Civic operated by 19-year-old Ashlyn Pippen was also traveling east on Highway 80 and attempted to turn north onto Vaudrey Road. The driver of the Honda Civic is reported as being in critical condition. The investigation by local authorities revealed that the driver of the Honda Civic failed to yield the right-of-way, which caused the Buick Enclave to crash into the Chevrolet Equinox before rolling over into a ditch. While all three drivers were transported to a local hospital, the 23-year-old man and 55-year-old woman sustained non-life-threatening injuries. While police officers were investigating the three-vehicle crash, a white Dodge Ram was also traveling south on Vaudrey Road and attempted to turn east onto Highway 80. Police reports indicate that the driver of the Dodge Ram, 48-year-old Yasvani Sanchez Alvarez, made an improper turn and then crashed into a marked Odessa police unit that had its flashing lights on. There were no reports of injuries from this specific crash. Alvarez, the driver of the Dodge Ram, was cited for failure to display driver's license and for an improper turn. The white Chevrolet Silverado, a marked OPD police unit, was unoccupied at the time of the crash. Midland Fire announces the addition of EMS-4. The Midland Fire Department has added an EMS service out of Fire Station 4, located at 5100 North Big Spring. In a social media post, the fire department acknowledged the addition of the medical emergency services accomplishes numerous objectives. One of them is providing quicker EMS responses to the citizens of District 4. Quote, because all MFD personnel are cross-trained for fire and EMS, this will also allow for an initial five-man response to fire calls in District 4. Engine 4 staffed with three personnel, EMS 4 with two personnel. End quote. Midland Fire wrote in a Facebook post. According to Midland Fire, in 2023, there were 1,126 EMS calls in Fire District 4. These calls were covered by all seven frontline units with EMS 3, 683 runs, and EMS 8, 259, covering the majority of them. During the calendar year 2022, MFD had 14,835 calls for service. In 2023, there was a 24.8% increase in EMS calls, resulting in a total of 18,516 EMS runs. Donors choose. Richard Milburn Academy teacher seeks snacks, beverages for students. Ms. Hampton, a teacher at the Richard Milburn Academy, is seeking classroom snacks and juice for her students on DonorsChoose.com. The project expires March 12th. There is $425 needed to fully fund it. Quote, most of my students come from low-income, underprivileged households. As a teacher, I never knew if the students have gotten their need for food met at home. I like to have them healthy snacks and breakfast items that they can eat in the classroom, end quote, Hampton posted. Hampton added that eating healthy food is linked with higher grades, faster information processing, and better memory and alertness. Donate online, https://www.donorschoose.org/project/open-your-mind-with-a-snack-in-hand/8025643-. Building permits. Building permits December 25th through December 29th. 104 South Pecos Street, new commercial. 3210 Thomas Avenue, residential alteration. 2305 Somerset Drive, new residence. 2306 Somerset Drive, new residence. 2307 Somerset Drive, new residence. 2304 Fortune Drive, new residence. 2306 Fortune Drive, new residence. 6906 Expedition Drive, new residence. 1204 McDonald Street, residential alteration. 6908 Expedition Drive, new residence. 7012 Expedition Drive, new residence. 7008 Expedition Drive, new residence. 419 Neely Avenue, residential alteration. 7006 Expedition Drive, new residence. 7004 Expedition Drive, new residence. 7002 Expedition Drive, new residence. 7000 Expedition Drive, new residence. 6912 Expedition Drive, new residence. 6910 Expedition Drive, new residence. 2408 Story Avenue, residential alteration. 5323 Sinclair Avenue, sign. 5011 West Loop 250 North, sign. 5301 Chola Road, sign. Life Tributes. Del Trolinder, 1-8-1937 to 12-29-2023. Lubbock. Longtime Midland resident, Del Trolinder, passed away after a brief illness Friday, December 29th, in Lubbock, Texas. He was 86 years old. He was born at home on a farm just outside Brownfield, Texas, on January 8, 1937, to Clyde and Layla May Trolinder. In addition to his parents, Del is predeceased by his brothers, Marvin and Otis Trolinder, his sister, Laverne Berryman, his stepdaughter, Kimberly Howard, wife, Sue Trolinder, and previous wife, Diane Trolinder. Del is survived by his son, Randy Trolinder, and his wife, Karen, in Crystal Beach, Texas, his daughter, Renee Matthews, in New Caney, Texas, his daughter, Robin Williams, in Conroe, Texas, his stepdaughter, Lila Wilson, and her husband, Aaron, in Lubbock, Texas, his stepson, Ed Klopfenstein, and his wife, Neho, in Meridian, Idaho, 11 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, 7 step-grandchildren, and 7 step-great-grandchildren. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, January 10th at 2 p.m. in the chapel at Ellis Funeral Home, followed by a graveside burial at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, you can make donations to Excellent Life Foundation, 3305 101st Street, Suite 200, Lubbock, Texas, 79423. William Bill Brooks, 2-5-1944 to 1-3-2024. William Bill Brooks, 79, of Stanton, Texas, passed away on January 3rd, 2024. There will be a viewing at the Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton on Monday, January 8th, 2024, from 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. Funeral service will be held at the Bellevue Church of Christ on Tuesday, January 9th, 2024, at 10 o'clock a.m. Graveside service will take place at Portales Cemetery at 2:30 p.m. Mountain on Tuesday, January 9th, 2024. William Brooks was born to Henry Brooks and Betty Black on February 5th, 1944, in Roswell, New Mexico. He is preceded in death by his parents, siblings, wife, and two sons, William Eric Brooks and Craig Ferguson Brooks. He is survived by his son, Aaron Scott Brooks, Paula Brooks, daughter Shelley Ramirez, Eusebio Ramirez Jr., his grandchildren Bonnie Ramirez, Hillary Ramirez, Megan Brooks, Bailey Luna, Aaron Brooks, Whitney Graham, Joshua Brooks, Marshall Brooks, Ashley Brooks, and Mariah Brooks, and many great-grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Clayton McConnell, 9-6-1931 to 12-11-2023. Clayton McConnell, 92, of Whitney, Texas, went to be with his Lord and Savior on Monday, December 11, 2023. He was surrounded by family and loved ones when he received complete healing and stepped through the gate of heaven to join the heavenly saints. A celebration of life service will be held at 11 o'clock a.m. Saturday, January 13, 2024, at White Bluff Chapel in Whitney, Texas. Clayton was born on September 6, 1931, in Clarksville, Texas, to his parents, Isaac Edmund McConnell and Velma Flanagan McConnell. He is preceded in death by his loving wife, Billy Sue Bivens McConnell, parents Isaac Edmund and Velma McConnell, and sister Doris Whitten. Clayton is survived by his children, Jerry McConnell and wife Delinda of Comanche, Texas, and Glenda McConnell, Bettina of Whitney, Texas, sister Clara Gaddis of Pagoda, Texas, grandchildren Amanda Chapel and husband Jason, Kimberly Ingram, Diana Brewer and husband Chris, Kyle McConnell and wife Kayla, and great-grandchildren Clayton Chapel and Abby Durden, Heaven Chapel, Colt Chapel, and Kale Ingram. In lieu of flowers, the family has suggested memorials be made in Clayton's name to the Cuthan Cemetery Fund, care of Guarantee Bank, P.O. Box 600, Bogota, Texas, 75417. Connie Cross Simon, 3/30/1959 to 12/31/2023. Midland. On December 31st, 2023, Connie Sue Cross Simon, a faithful woman who loved the Lord, passed away peacefully at the age of 64 in Midland, Texas. She was born on March 30th, 1959 in Midland, Texas, to W.A. and Faye Cross, who have both predeceased her in life. Connie is survived by her five children, Bobby Capel, Becca Scott, James Jim Scott, Sarah Furtado, and William Will Scott, and eight grandchildren. Visitation will be from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. on Monday, January 8th, 2024, at Willowbrook Funeral Home, 1311 West Florida Avenue, Midland, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Tuesday, January 9th, 2024, at Stonegate Fellowship in Building F, 6000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, Texas, with Russ Hale officiating. Graveside services will follow at Newman Cemetery in Fisher County at 3 o'clock p.m. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Charlotte Franklin. Charlotte Franklin, 72, of Midland, passed away December 25, 2023. Celebration of life will be held at 11 o'clock a.m., Friday, January 12, 2024, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Diana Salazar. Diana Salazar, age 58, of Midland, Texas, passed away January 2, 2024. Viewing will be held Monday, January 8, 2024, from 10 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. at Heavenly Gate at 405 North Terrell, Midland, Texas, 79701, with a prayer service at 7 o'clock p.m. Funeral services will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Tuesday, January 9, 2024, at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel, with burial services to follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery, 6800 South Highway 349, Midland, Texas, 79706. Funeral services have been entrusted to Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Tito Martinez Ornelas. Tito Martinez Ornelas passed away peacefully January 3, 2023. Visitation will be held at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North Lamesa Road, Midland, Texas, 79701, on Monday, January 8, 2024, from 1 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m., with a rosary at 7 o'clock p.m. Funeral services will be Tuesday, January 9, 2024, at 2 o'clock p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church, 1906 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Interment will immediately follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery, 6800 SH 349, Midland, Texas, 79706. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 8th. Council to discuss aging wastewater system again. The story was written by Kim Smith. The city's aging wastewater system will again be a topic of discussion amongst Odessa City Council members this week. During the council's work session at 3 p.m. Tuesday, the city council will talk about spending $90,000 with Corolla Engineering to study Line Q within the city's collection system. Back in November, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality issued an odor nuisance violation to the city. According to materials provided to the council, the utilities department needs to characterize the type of odor and the concentration of hydrogen sulfide in the line before it can make recommendations on next steps to mitigate the odor. Utilities Director Kevin Niles will also ask the city to consider spending close to $57,000 to upgrade the Darrington plant's dechlorination system, which is a sulfur dioxide injection system. According to materials provided to the council by Niles, the system is currently a pressure system, and he'd like to change it to a vacuum system. Niles called the system outdated and dangerous, and likely to leak or break down at any time. Quote, "The team needs to make minor repairs on the system, but they are afraid making the repairs could damage the sulfonator and parts needed are no longer kept in stock," Niles wrote. Last month, the council heard a damning report about the Darrington plant from Performance Services Incorporated. A representative told the council it's been decades since any maintenance has been done on the city's water lines, and she used words like non-functioning, unsafe, and unrepairable to discuss various components at the plant. Mayor Javier Hoven formed a committee to figure out how to address the issues and how to pay for it. During the council's regular meeting, which starts at 6 p.m., the council may repeal the ordinance that provides grants to downtown merchants to improve their facades and infrastructure. Since 2016, the Odessa Development Corporation has provided grant money to downtown businesses as a means to both attract new businesses and improve existing aesthetics. Eligible business owners and operators can receive up to $25,000 in ODC grant money for their facades and up to $200,000 to revamp their infrastructure. According to materials provided to the council, the ordinance needs to be repealed to, quote, "give more flexibility to the Odessa Development Corporation in amending the program as needed," end quote. The council will also discuss the possible creation of a committee to review how hotel-motel occupancy tax funds are spent on Tuesday. In addition, the council members are considering giving $50,000 from the HOT fund to the county for the Ector County Coliseum, which is turning 70 this year. Coliseum Director Aaron Martin asked the council for the money in a recent letter, noting the Coliseum promotes tourism in the community. He noted that, according to legend, the county was never billed for water until the 1980s, and when the city began to bill them, the city agreed to offset the bill by donating money from the HOT fund, since it's one of the main taxes the Coliseum feeds. Martin noted the Coliseum plays host to the Odessa Jackalopes and the Jackalopes Youth Hockey Organization. The electrical expenses to maintain the ice is more than $60,000 a year, and their annual budget for the water used to make the ice is $60,000 as well. The council is also scheduled to discuss the possibility of using American Rescue Plan Act money to fund a free clinic for early diabetes detection. At the council's last meeting, they agreed, in theory, to give $1 million in ARPA money to Medical Center Hospital for the new mental health facility. The council will formally vote on that decision Tuesday night as well. Other ways to spend the ARPA money will be discussed at the council's work session, along with entering an agreement with the West Texas Soccer Association to use the city's soccer facilities for their select soccer teams. It will also hear from Copper Key Realty's John Herridge about proposals to purchase old fire station number 6 on Brentwood Drive.
Obituaries. Longtime resident Denman Denny Andrews passed away on December the 26th at the age of 89. Homer Lee Ham, age 80, of Cedar Park, Texas, passed away on December the 28th. Johnny Wayne Whitley unexpectedly passed away on November the 29th. A memorial service was held on Saturday, January the 6th at 11 a.m. at the Crossroad Church Chapel in Odessa. Irma De Gomez, age 77, of Odessa, died Saturday, December the 30th. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Tuesday, January the 9th, at the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Ector County Cemetery in Odessa, 2 Gardens. Lupe Lopez, age 71, of Odessa, died Saturday, December the 30th, in Odessa. A funeral service was held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, January the 3rd, at the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Bob R. McAlpine passed away on January the 2nd at the age of 91. Joyce Freeman Montgomery Young passed away peacefully at home on December the 29th. Brianne Lynn Carver, age 57, of Odessa, passed away on Monday, January the 1st. A memorial service was held on Monday, January the 8th at 1 p.m. at the Acres West Funeral Chapel. Wanda Rusty Ludwell passed away peacefully on December the 26th. Services are scheduled at 10:30 a.m. January the 13th at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, January 6th. Atlas constructing 42-mile sand conveyor system. System will carry sand from its mine in Kermit into Lee County, New Mexico. The story was written by Mel McEwen, oil editor. Utilizing conveyor technology is common in the mining industry, whether for iron ore or other minerals. A 12-mile conveyor system was used in a lignite mine near Austin that has now been decommissioned. Atlas Energy Solutions is utilizing that technology in its Permian Basin frac sand mining operations, constructing a 42-mile electrified conveyor system carrying sand from Atlas's mine at Kermit into Lee County, New Mexico. It is believed to be the first application of conveyor technology to long-haul proppant. Kyle Turlington, Vice President, Investor Relations with Atlas, said the team designing Dune Express got to visit the Austin area lignite mine and talked to the people who designed and operated the conveyor system. Quote, "Our founder knows how much sand has changed the area," he told a reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Ben Bud Brigham founded the company in 2017 as Atlas Sand. Turlington said Dune Express will benefit the area, first, reducing truck traffic, thus improving road safety, and second, benefiting the environment by reducing emissions. Dune Express is capable of transporting 13 million tons of proppant annually, and with over 84,000 tons of dry storage within the system. It will have 2 permanent loadouts located at State Line in Texas and at the end of the line in New Mexico. It is also designed to offer mobile loadouts. Quote, "We designed the conveyor so we can take sand off at any point," said Turlington. "Wherever it makes sense, with 24 hours notice, we can set up a mobile loadout, end quote. He said Atlas is encouraged with the performance of the supply chain and is already receiving delivery of key items, such as overhead crossings that will take the conveyor over highways. He estimated 90% of equipment and materials are on order, with some long lead time items already in Midland. The $400 million project is on budget and on time to be completed in the fourth quarter of the year, Turlington said. Rig activity has declined modestly in the Permian Basin, but Turlington said a positive trend is completion efficiency, which has benefited Atlas and its frac sand peers. With horizontal well laterals becoming longer, he estimated the amount of sand pressure pumpers used monthly is up 50% since 2019. Quote, I think we anticipate modest improvement in activity, he said. Activity levels should improve from today. We have a very balanced outlook for the market, end quote. Martin County leads as top oil-producing county in Texas. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Martin County, again, was the top oil-producing county in Texas, according to October figures provided by the Railroad Commission. 9 of the top 10 oil-producing counties are in the Permian Basin. Reeves County was the top natural gas-producing county, according to the commission. 7 Permian Basin counties found their way to the top 10. In preliminary figures provided by operators, the commission said statewide production was 114 million barrels, or an average of 3 million barrels per day. Natural gas production totaled 893 MCF, or an average of 28 million MCF per day. Production came from 162,000 oil wells and 86,000 gas wells. The commission provided updated volumes for October 2022, 137 million barrels, up from a preliminary report of 110 million barrels, and 996 million MCF, up from preliminary reports of 848 million MCF. Top 10 crude oil producing counties in terms of barrels. Martin County, 17,500,000. Midland, 16,976,000. Upton, 8,118,000. Howard County, 7,564,000. Loving, 6,334,000. Carnes, 5,900,000. Glasscock, 4,473,000. Reeves, 4,339,000. Andrews, 3,990,000. Reagan, 3,673,000. Top 10 natural gas producing counties in terms of cubic feet. Reeves County, 84,804,000. Webb County, 75,641,000. Midland County, 67,839,000. Panola County, 52,774,000. Martin County, 44,328,000. Loving, 38,239,000. Culberson County, 37,215,000. Upton County, 33,461,000. Harrison County, 31,198,000. Howard County, 26,462,000. Top 10 counties in total condensate production in terms of barrels. Reeves County, 6,936,000. Loving County, 4,135,000. Culberson County, 3,275,000. Carnes County, 1,308,000. Webb County, 1,272,000. DeWitt County, 1,146,000. Dimmitt County, 721,000. Ward County, 510,000. Live Oak County, 500,000. McMullen County, 277,000. Civitas closes Venser Energy acquisition. The story was written by Mela McEwen, oil editor. Denver's Civitas Resources completed its entry into the Permian Basin last year by closing the purchase of Venser Energy's Midland Basin assets from Vitol. With the $2.1 billion deal closed and following the $4.7 billion acquisition of Tap Rock Resources and Hibernia Energy III, Civitas has finalized $6.8 billion in Permian Basin deals. Quote, with the acquisition of Venser, Civitas not only increases its position and production in the Permian Basin, but we add more incredible talent to our growing team. We're excited about our future going into the new year with a more durable and robust business, Chris Doyle, Civitas President and Chief Executive Officer, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Under the terms of the agreement, Civitas issued Venser 7,181,000 shares of common stock and $1 billion of cash. A $550 million deferred cash payment is due to Venser on January 3, 2025. Civitas currently plans to use cash on hand and/or borrowings on the credit facility to fund the deferred cash payment. Doyle added in a statement announcing completion of the deal, quote, Civitas now holds high-quality, scaled asset positions in both the Permian and Denver-Julesburg basins. Our assets, in combination with their strong balance sheet and low-cost structure, place us in a solid position to continue to deliver the industry's best shareholder cash return program over the long term, end quote. The Venser deal added approximately 350 net new drilling locations, 44,000 net acres, and current production of about 62,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day to Civitas's scale. Doyle said last year in announcing the Venser deal that scale matters in the industry, as do depth and quality of inventory. Beginning with the purchase of Tap Rock and Hibernia from NGP Energy Capital, Civitas began the transformation from a solely DJ Basin player to a DJ Basin and Permian player. The company already has plans to drill 10 Spraberry wells in Reagan County. Permian to benefit from science-backed restoration practices. This story was written by Mela McEwen, oil editor. Borderlands Research Institute at Sul Ross State University in Alpine is receiving oil and gas industry support in its efforts to conserve the natural resources of the Chihuahuan Desert. Apache Corporation has formed a partnership with the institute to launch a well pad restoration research project. Through this multi-year partnership, researchers at BRI and Texas Native Seeds, a project of the Caesar Kleberg Wildlife Research Institute at Texas A&M Kingsville, will investigate methods to improve habitat restoration efforts in the Permian Basin, with the goal of publishing a science-backed best practices reclamation document to be shared with other Permian operators. Quote, we all depend on the energy produced in the Permian Basin to power our lives, and we look forward to bringing valuable science to the table to support enhanced restoration practices in the energy industry, Dr. Lewis Harvison, the Dan Allen Hughes Jr. Endowed Director of Borderlands Research Institute, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "We appreciate the opportunity to partner with Apache on this important research and applaud their leadership on this issue," end quote. Jessica Jackson, Apache's Vice President of Environment, Health, and Safety, said in a statement, quote, "We are honored to partner with the Borderlands Research Institute on this important effort, which aligns with our mission to meet the growing demand for energy and to do so in a cleaner, more sustainable way. For many years, Apache has worked to restore well pads to their habitat potential. To further our efforts to continuously improve, Apache is supporting scientific research at sites in the Permian Basin to study the efficacy of methods for habitat restoration," end quote. Typically, at the end of a well's service life, the well is plugged, equipment is removed, and the pad is reseeded and allowed to gradually return to a natural condition. This project looks to accelerate a more vibrant return to nature by considering alternative soil preparation techniques, adding biochar to improve soil fertility, and incorporating undesirable scrub brush as a vegetative cover to hold soil moisture and discourage grassland animals from foraging on the seeds before they germinate. The project will help inform oil and gas operators in the Permian about how changes in the industry's collective approach to restoring end-of-service well pads can have broader benefits to local biodiversity and reunite fragmented habitats. In addition, this project will also measure increases in soil carbon to passively sequester CO2 in healthy desert soils and will support Sul Ross State University student research through BRI. In total, this joint project will present best practices specific to the Chihuahuan Desert that are shown to have a demonstrative positive impact on overall biodiversity and natural ecosystem function. While habitat restoration studies have been done in other locations, much remains unknown about the Chihuahuan Desert, particularly regarding habitat restoration under a sound study design. The reclamation of degraded landscapes is increasingly recognized as a critical step in alleviating industry impacts.
Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 90-year-old male on glipizide for type 2 diabetes and finasteride for an enlarged prostate. I take daily walks and follow a careful but not strict diet. Lately, the frequency of my urination has increased to every 2 hours throughout the day and night. Is a change in medication indicated? Dr. Roach responds, a thorough evaluation is indicated. There are 3 possibilities that I see immediately, but several others are also worth considering. Any person with diabetes who notes increased urination should be evaluated for high blood sugar. Glipizide alone might be a good treatment for you, but we hardly ever start our patients on it anymore because other medicines have proven to be better. Glipizide works by forcing the pancreas to make more insulin. But since the problem with type 2 diabetes is insulin resistance, more insulin isn't ideal. Many people treated with glipizide for years eventually fail, and blood sugar also goes up. Very high blood sugar overwhelms the kidney's ability to reabsorb sugar, so sugar and water are lost in great amounts by the kidney. A urine and blood sugar test can evaluate this possibility, and an A1C test can show how your blood sugar control has been. If you are urinating a lot every 2 hours, that would support this possibility. Most people also have other symptoms, like blurry vision or feeling thirsty all the time. You are also taking medicine for an enlarged prostate, but despite treatment, you still may have a prostate so enlarged that you don't feel fully empty if you are only urinating a small amount every 2 hours and feel that you haven't completely emptied your bladder, that can support this hypothesis. A sonogram after urinating can confirm this guess, but even an exam might indicate a full bladder. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married for 2 years. We rushed into marriage, unfortunately, before getting to know each other very well. Whenever we have a disagreement, he gives me the silent treatment for days. Sometimes it lasts weeks. He won't eat anything I cook or help around the house. If I'm in one room, he will lock himself up in another one. He sleeps on the couch or on a pull-out mattress. Eventually, he will end it by returning to our bed and trying to initiate intimacy. I usually accept, but the issue never gets resolved or discussed. We just carry on. When I've tried discussing the issues, he says, "Don't start." I'm fed up with his childish behavior. We have a 7-month-old baby and children from my previous marriage, so it has become increasingly difficult for me to leave him. He's not the type to go to therapy. He will admit we have communication issues, but that's the extent of it. I've reached the point that I no longer care about our marriage, and if I had the means, I'd happily leave. Please help. Signed, The Silent Treatment. Dear Abby responds, Dear Silent Treatment, because your husband doesn't want to go to therapy does not mean you shouldn't. When you tell him that you plan to schedule some sessions, expect him to find a dozen reasons why you don't need it, or to go into another silent phase. Therapy for you would be illuminating and could help you decide how much longer you want to tolerate an increasingly intolerable living situation. And another Dear Abby, we recently attended the wedding of a close family member on my husband's side. All went seemingly well until the next day, when I was sharing snapshots of the beautiful day with my stepdaughter. I promptly received what I'll call a form letter via text from her saying, "Hi, as the holidays approach, we're sending this message to our close family members. With flu season coming up and a rise in COVID cases, we're asking everyone to not kiss the baby. This is also a reminder not to take or post photos of the baby. We take lots of beautiful photos of her, and if you'd like some, we are happy to send them to you. Our goal is to minimize her media presence until she's old enough to consent to how her pictures are used." When I spoke to other family members, I realized none of them had received this message. I'm hurt. I spent what I thought was a beautiful day at a family function, taking snapshots of the event and of our grandchild. Now here's a text telling me not to take pics of her. I don't know how to handle this. Signed, Joy Destroyed in the West. Dear Joy Destroyed, says Dear Abby, you are the only person who received that message because you are the only person who was taking photos. Parents are entitled to decide whether they want pictures of their children posted on social media. You should always ask whether it's okay to post pictures of an event or a child before doing so. Now you know how your stepdaughter feels about it, so handle this by apologizing for any mistake you might have made.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.